It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer Kent. Kate is back on Monday. Suicide in America is on the rise. That's not necessarily the case in other parts of the planet. We explore that with a mental health specialist and talk about the risk factors, warning signs, and how to help. We also learn how our language affects our understanding of suicide. If you or a loved one are struggling with suicidal thoughts, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255, which offers free and confidential support for people in distress. And that number, if you need it, will be posted on the morning show's page on the WPR.org website. We would like to hear from you this morning. Has suicide affected you? Has it affected your loved ones? Has it affected your community? 800-642-1234. You give us a call, email ideas@wpr.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Leah Rolando is a suicide prevention specialist at Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Leah Rolando, thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Good morning.
So according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, suicide rate increased 33% between 1999 and 2017. Globally, however, suicide rate is decreasing. The rate has fallen by 38% from its peak in 1994. What do you make of those opposing statistics?
Yeah, this is a really popular question that has the national conversation speculating on different things. And of course, I can't answer as a sociologist or a researcher.
Yeah.
But in my work, we know one main thing that is a protective factor for people is connection. And so when we think about other countries and the way that they have, tighter kinship networks sometimes, family supports, community maybe in more intentional ways than the U.S., that could potentially be a protective factor. So that's just one of the many reasons that we might see that. We know there's other researchers that have different reasons as well.
Yeah, even though the rates declined in some other countries, there are still countries like Russia, South Korea, Japan, India, where the suicide rate is still higher than the U.S. rate, even though U.S. has been going up and those countries have been coming down. But the U.S. rate has risen in nearly every state over the past two decades, and half the states, the rate increased by more than 30%. What does the suicide rate look like here in Wisconsin?
Here in Wisconsin, we're generally above the national average, not dramatically so, but generally speaking, it's rising at the same rate, just a little bit higher.
Is there conjecture as to why Wisconsin is doing more than the country, even though the country is increasing as well?
Yeah, again, multiple answers. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't have one answer, because suicide is complex.
It is indeed.
But when we talk about rural areas, we talk about access to lethal means. And in the suicide prevention world, that's access to guns. And so states that have easier access to guns, easier access to gun suicides. And when it's the suicide prevention conversation, it's that conversation about either youth who might be impulsive during a crisis. So we want to talk about safe storage. So you really can't talk about suicide prevention without talking about gun violence prevention as well, and safe storage and all of that.
Suicide's long been stigmatized as an unfortunate choice that people make that affects family and others for years to come. How has the way we understand that changed in recent years?
I think there's been a ton done in actually breaking that stigma down. And I think that comes mainly from people with lived experience of suicidal thoughts or suicide attempts, sharing their experiences of recovery and hope, and sharing that message that there is life after a suicide attempt and there's life after suicide thoughts. It doesn't mean that after a suicide attempt, everything's going to be perfect and better.
Right.
But it means that suicide doesn't have to be an option. And so that's important in the way we talk about it in the media, which is why we always want to talk about the suicide prevention conversation rather than just suicide, and be proactive rather than reactive.
Let's spend a little more time with that. How does the way we talk about suicide and the language we use to describe it help or hinder conversation around it?
Yeah. So it's kind of my favorite thing to talk about, because language matters so much. And I think people kind of know that, but when you really think about the way that we talk about suicide, commit is still a word that we hear all the time.
Sure.
People say people commit suicide rather than the preferred died by suicide or died of suicide. And when you think about the word commit, that has implications of it being a criminal act, which it was.
Yes.
And people being punished for wanting to kill themselves or dying by suicide.
It was a parallel of homicide,
right.
which is killing somebody else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then the other piece is religious. So it's seen as a sin. And so, especially in faith communities, there's still a lot of stigma around people thinking about suicide, because it's that question of, you know, if you die by suicide, are you going to heaven?
Right.
And that's, you know, a bigger question among those communities. So
yeah.
It's just even when you talk about commit and you relate it to a sin or a crime, it doesn't do anything helpful for the people who are actually struggling and for those families who have lost someone to suicide.
I'm curious, within the faith communities, if we're seeing a change in the way that they're expressing thoughts about that. Again, you know, even if you think it's sinful, is there more work being done toward prevention because of that?
I see a ton of work being done towards prevention in faith communities. I can personally speak to my own in the greater Milwaukee area and the Madison area. A lot of churches host QPR trainings, which is called Question, Persuade, Refer, and it's a gatekeeper training to ask someone how they're thinking about suicide, or if they're thinking about suicide and how to intervene. And so churches are welcoming us in as trainers to talk to their congregations about what can we do to have this conversation as a congregation and not just in the mental health sphere. So I see a lot of hope there.
Leah Orlando is a suicide prevention specialist with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Let's try to get one call in before we go to break. This is Jenny from Winneconne. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hey, I was just going to tell you, I've been involved in the suicide awareness and prevention community for a long time. I had a son that died in 2007 by suicide. He was 18 years old, and of course, that was a devastating event. So just in a short synopsis, the events leading up to his death was caused by bullying through and through. He was young, didn't have the resources and the ability to figure out what to do, who to ask, where to go, that kind of thing. And he really didn't present with the signs and symptoms that a normal somebody that's older or that you would be more familiar with would present with. So, I mean, I had my ideas, but we had him in treatment, things like that. So, anyways, long story short, I started the Suicide Awareness Walk in Oshkosh in 2011, and I ran that for 4 years based on volunteer work. It got so big, I had to give it over, and I passed it on to NAMI, which is National Alliance for Mental Illness. And they still run it to this day. Now, I'm not involved in the walk anymore, but it's a way to get information out about mental illness as it relates to suicide and all the things that go with that. So I'm a nurse. I'm very connected to people's bodies, minds, and souls, physically and mentally. I truly, truly think as I've aged in this whole process that a lot of it has to do with what you said earlier, connection, community. One of the big things that I've done research on a little bit myself, and it pops up a lot for me.
Jenny, we're getting a little too close to the break time. I'm going to have to step in. Thank you for your call, though, and sorry for your loss, and appreciate letting us know where you are in this conversation. We're speaking with Leah Orlando of the Mental Health America of Wisconsin about suicide prevention. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Kate Archer Kent. After news at the bottom of the hour, we talk about ways to get our kids to read. Right now, our focus is the rising rate of suicide in America. what are you or your community doing to prevent suicide or raise awareness? And what questions do you have about suicide prevention? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. And before we resume our conversation with Leo Rolando, the suicide specialist with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, also want to give the number again for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255, that number for National Suicide Prevention. The Lifeline offers free and confidential support for people in distress. Leo Rolando, a professor of criminal justice at Wayne State University, has drawn a correlation between suicide rates and income inequality. What role can financial strain play in one's risk for suicide?
Economic factors are a huge piece in suicide prevention. So on the positive side, when people have access to jobs, healthcare, the things, you know, their basic needs, that's totally a protective factor. Yeah. But when people are in economic distress, whether that's a job loss or just the environment in general, it's a risk factor. And so the coalitions that we work with across Wisconsin, one of the things they can do is work to enroll people in health insurance and make sure they have appropriate services in their area and do advocacy efforts to make sure those services are funded.
Paul from Eau Claire emailed to ask, is it true that men suffer the vast majority of suicides, making this mainly a men's health issue?
It is a men's health issue, absolutely. And we know that men in their middle years specifically are the ones who are dying the most by suicide in the U.S. That's not necessarily attempts or thoughts. As we know, suicidal thoughts are actually more common than a lot of people think. But men are absolutely the ones dying the most. And so we need new and creative and good ways to bring men together and talk about these issues.
Do we have a sense of why middle age is a factor?
When you talk about economic stress and job loss, maybe divorce, relationship problems, family problems, a lot of those can happen in the middle years. And then having the ability to have access to guns, if we're talking about rural areas or really any areas, men we know are more likely to die by suicide via gun than women.
Data also shows that suicide for Native Americans is about 3.5 times higher than it is for racial and ethnic groups with the lowest rates. Why might that be the case? Is it maybe that rural situation again, or are there other layers with that?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it, the rural piece. But I would also imagine that other layers are involved. So when you think about a sense of community and you don't have the ability to celebrate your own culture and celebrate your own community in certain places. And I think when you think about oppression as a whole and the way that it affects people's communities, that's when you start to see rises in suicide attempts and suicidal thoughts in Native youth specifically, kids of color in schools, LGBTQ youth.
Mm-hmm.
So identity is a big piece of it.
So if someone listening wants to know how they can identify whether someone in their life may be at risk of suicide, what should they do?
First off, ask. I know it's an uncomfortable conversation, and sometimes people might say it in a joking way.
Yeah.
You know, oh, if this doesn't happen, I'm just going to kill myself. Mm. And people might want to brush that off and not have that awkward conversation. But the important message is to have that awkward conversation, as awkward as it may be. And then if they say yes, then you've been able to reach that person, and then you can work with them to identify what might be the best support plan for them and any treatment they might need. And if they say no, then that's fine. They just say no, and you know that they're not thinking about suicide.
So if they say yes and they agree that, gee, I probably should talk to somebody, where do you handhold to get them where they need to be?
Right. It's going to depend on person. So if it's a close personal relationship, you'll be able to play more of a role. But if it's a stranger, you can just offer resources. So some communities with local suicide prevention coalitions have crisis cards with resources on them that might be culturally specific or low cost. So that might be an option as well.
Leo Rolando is a suicide prevention specialist at Mental Health America of Wisconsin. How has suicide affected you and your loved ones? How has it affected your community? And we'd like to know. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet and mention at WPR Mornings. What if you suspect if you yourself might be at risk of suicide? What resources are available to help?
I totally stand by everybody needing a safety plan. We talk about safety plans in the suicide prevention world when we're working with people at risk, whether they're in the hospital or an outpatient treatment center, but everybody needs a safety plan. And so that just includes distractions, people that you can talk to when you're in distress, crisis numbers when it's really high crisis. And then making sure you yourself have access to either counseling or therapy, a support group. And then another free resource is the Crisis Text Line, and that is a crisis service for anyone in the nation. You just text HOPELINE, HOPELINE, to 741741. And that's a quick, easy resource. It's not an alternative to counseling or therapy, mm-hmm. but it's brief crisis counseling. So
good. How much of a role does depression play in suicide?
A pretty big one. So I know depression and other mood disorders, even anxiety or ADHD, especially in youth, can put someone at increased risk for suicide. And so if somebody's struggling with depression, if they have a therapist or counselor, that should be an ongoing conversation and should be asked at sessions when people don't seem to be doing very well.
We heard earlier from Jenny of Winneconne and her son. The suicide was after bullying.
Mm-hmm.
We hear stories all the time about people who've been bullied, cyberbullied into these sorts of decisions. How in your profession, I would assume that's something of a new, at least the cyber aspect of that is something new, but where does bullying factor in here?
Yeah.
And how do you detect it?
Right. There's a ton of research being done on this, and bullying isn't the only reason someone might consider suicide, but since it is one of the reasons, we need to be working with our schools and the staff at schools to make sure programs are in place to help kids have a sense of belonging. And so those are programs that can be peer-led, adult-guided, making sure kids know who to talk to when they're being bullied, having a trusted adult, and really emphasizing resilience and getting that message out there that although people do die by suicide and could have been bullied, that doesn't have to be someone else's option. We never want to say that bullying immediately causes suicide, because that lets kids think, this might be an option for me.
Yeah.
And suicide doesn't have to be an option. There's a lot of other options to work through that and get kids connected to resources.
What are some barriers in the way of people seeking help and getting help for others?
Yeah. First, an easy one is people not knowing how to identify someone at risk for suicide. So a way to counter that is these suicide prevention gatekeeper trainings. So teaching people how to ask the question, how to persuade someone to stay alive, and how to refer someone to resources. Healthcare is a big issue. If people can't get access to mental health services, everything we're doing to tell people to reach out, really doesn't have a backing if those mm-hmm. services aren't there.
Last year, we saw some high-profile personalities die of suicide. How has suicide typically been covered, and when this sort of thing happens?
Yeah, the news articles that I saw were very prevention-focused and helpful in decreasing the stigma. A lot of them didn't use the means, and that's safe reporting, not using the means and not glorifying any deaths by suicide. But a lot of the articles that I saw listed resources, talked about hope, talked about lived experience. And so I think that helped elevate the suicide prevention conversation without elevating only fear and that, public fear of suicide, because we want to talk about lived experience and we want to talk about hope. And I think in part, the conversations afterwards did their best to make that happen.
Could you repeat one more time the text opportunity if people are feeling that they need help and they need it now? Seems like that's an easy way to at least reach out.
Right, absolutely. And I'm also a volunteer for the crisis text line. So that number is 741-741. So you just text the word HOPELINE, HOPELINE. To that number, and then a crisis counselor will text back and see what you need.
Great to have you with us this morning, Leah Orlando. Yeah. Leah is the suicide prevention specialist at Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Glad you could come.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you or a loved one are struggling with suicidal thoughts, you can also call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255, which offers free and confidential support for people in distress. Next up is the news. Then we get advice on how to get kids excited about reading. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer Kent. You're tuned to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer Kent. On Monday, January 7th, Tony Evers becomes the 46th governor of Wisconsin. You can listen at that time during Monday's edition of The Morning Show at this time as we preview what's to come with the inauguration. We'll take your questions ahead of the official change of command. Then you can listen live at 11 as Tony Evers takes the oath of office and addresses the state for the first time as governor. WPR Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg will host live coverage of the inauguration. That begins Monday morning at 11 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And again, your questions and comments and thoughts about the incoming Evers administration available during this time on Monday morning when Kate Archer Kent returns. Now on to the topic at hand. As the weather grows colder, kids, teens, and parents alike are sometimes stuck indoors. Reading as a family can be a great winter activity, but not always easy as it sounds. Our guests offer book recommendations for all ages, as well as advice to get kids excited about reading. Do you find it hard to get your kids into books? Do you have kids of varying ages, and how does that complicate things? 800-642-1234 is your number to call. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joining us from our Eau Claire studios, Becky Wojahn. She's an author and teaches children's and young adult literature. Becky Wojahn, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
And Caroline Akrovic is an author and library elementary school librarian. Caroline, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good to have you along. Hey, you're both experienced librarians. Many parents have children of varying ages. Caroline, what suggestions do you have for families that want to enjoy the library together?
Well, I think that speaking with the librarians at the public library, they can help you find good choices. Also, finding books and authors that the adults can enjoy as well as the children makes it much more engaging for the children and for the adults. If you can communicate your enthusiasm for reading and books to your child, they're more likely to be a reader.
Becky, are there types of books that can engage elementary age kids and their younger siblings at the same time?
There are, and also a lot of times, like, just reading the books together, because sometimes people think picture books are only for the youngest kids, but there's a lot going on in the pictures and the language and the themes, and so many times picture books can be a great thing for older kids, but also using audiobooks, and sometimes it's okay to, if they're not reading the same book, you can do, like, side-by-side reading where they're both reading books, but it's different books at the same time. And really just the act of going to the library together and being excited, like Caroline said, about finding books, that is a really good family reading activity, too.
I remember once on a family trip, my oldest daughter was into the Harry Potter series, and she had two younger siblings, and she read the Harry Potter book out loud, and the other kids got to listen, so they got to enjoy it, even though it was kind of above their reading level at the time, and they both ended up reading the book, so it worked out.
Yeah, kids can, you know, if you're listening to a book, you can understand a much higher level, more complex book, and even if they don't get everything out of it, they're still getting a lot from it, and
sure,
it's really a fun activity.
We also teach kids, when they're learning to read, to look at the pictures and use the words to decode the story.
Sure.
So with kids who aren't yet readers, who are early readers, they can look at the pictures and tell their own story through the pictures. And the really, really effective, well-done picture books that are available today really allow kids to use their imaginations to tell a story.
You came armed with some recommendations, so let's start with picture books. Becky, what standout picture books would you recommend?
I've got a couple here that I brought in, actually. One, you know, a lot of people read before bedtime, and so I have one called Don't Blink by Amy Krauss Rosenthal, and it's really a fun, interactive one that I think really all ages would enjoy, but probably younger kids especially. Basically, the premise is that every time you blink, you have to turn a page, and when you get to the end of the book, you have to go to bed. And so the little owl character in the story is encouraging the reader not to blink so that, you know, you can stay up later. And it's just really a fun, interactive, you know, not a passive type story. Another one I have is a nonfiction book called Cute as an Axolotl. I stumble on that word every time, by Jess Keating. It's a nonfiction book, and so keep that in mind. A lot of kids, especially young kids, really enjoy informational books. And this is an animal book, basically featuring a different cute animal on every page. But it's written in a really conversational, fun, witty tone, so there's lots of fun facts in there. But also just like really fun, and it can be picked up and browsed and not having to be read cover to cover.
I've actually read that book with fourth and fifth graders, and what I liked about it, well, first of all, the photographs are completely engaging, and there are also drawings in the book, but you can read it at so many different levels, and that's really the power of nonfiction, that you have kind of a cute caption part, and then you also have nonfiction facts. Another book that I really liked, which is back to the fiction area, is The Wall in the Middle of the Book by John Agee. And what this book is, there's a wall literally in the middle of the book, and on one side of the wall is this knight, and he's afraid of what's on the other side of the wall. However, the person reading the book or the kids looking at the book see on his side of the wall things are actually a lot scarier. The water's rising, there are sea monsters. I like picture books that are amusing because the pictures often tell a different story than what's actually happening in the text. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really like that story. Sparky is another one I liked by Jenny Offel. And Sparky's a sloth, which makes him an unlikely pet. However, a little girl ends up getting this sloth by mail order. And he really doesn't do much as a pet, but he ends up being the right pet for her. And I think the illustrations are just magnificent in this story. And kids really like sloths. So
yeah, they're hot right now. That's
for
sure.
Sloths are hot.
Another animal book I really loved is called Lovely Beast by Kate Gardner. And that it also kind of ties in with kind of an unlikely thing. It's a fun book because it gives you an animal and then an adjective. So, for example, a gorilla and the word fierce. So kind of your stereotypical what you think of when you think of that animal. But when you turn the page, you find out that the fierce was just part of a sentence, and it's fierce papa. Uh-huh. And it talks about how animal stereotypes, you know, they're not always what you first expect. And it's just kind of a neat conversation starter, too, because that's true, of course, not only for animals, but people as well. So that's a fun one as well.
That's Becky Wojan. She's an author and teaches children's and young adult literature. Also joining us, Caroline Akrovic, an author and elementary school librarian. They join us from our studio in Eau Claire. Are you a parent that's bored to tears with the contents of picture books? So what would you rather read? Our guests have tips. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So picture books don't have to be exclusively for parents reading to young children. They can also be great for elementary school kids learning to read. So Caroline, what picture books can you recommend for older readers?
Okay, so I really like nonfiction picture books for older readers because when I have kids coming in, I will read some chapter books, but I want to be able to, generally speaking, read an entire book when those kids are with me. So there are some really exciting nonfiction picture books available right now. Whoosh, Lonnie Johnson's Super Soaking Stream of Inventions by Chris Barton is one that I found kids really like. It's about the inventor of the Super Soaker water gun. So the first thing I do is I project up an image of a Super Soaker water gun, and every kid knows what a Super Soaker looks like. And the cool thing about Lonnie Johnson's story, it's a true story, is he is an inventor of many, many different things. And talking about his experiences, how he went through the frustrations of developing the Super Soaker gun, it gets kids excited about STEM, about science, math, and technology. I really like that story. Another one I really liked was Curiosity, the story of the Mars rover. This is the Mars rover is actually the Curiosity sent to Mars. It's the story of it. But the rover itself is kind of personified, but there are nonfiction facts throughout the story. Kids love this book, and it's very sciencey. It's straight up nonfiction, but the pictures are gorgeous and it's very exciting. Kids like space, so I highly recommend nonfiction in the picture books for kids as well. Would you agree, Becky?
The other great thing about reading nonfiction is that's great for multiple age levels too, because younger kids, you can just read like the big text on the page, but older kids can dive into the captions and the back matter and the timelines and all that stuff.
Well, that would have been all over this book because I was a huge space fan. I mean, I read everything I could about space and looked at everything I could. Now, Becky, you have some early reading picture book recommendations as well, right?
Picture book ones or for easy readers, are you talking more? Beginning readers?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for those early elementary grades.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, one of the ones that I pulled for that is actually a poetry book. And so many of our listeners might be familiar with Shel Silverstein and all his silly poems that at least I grew up with.
Sure.
There's a new book called I'm Just No Good at Rhyming and Other Nonsense for Mischievous Kids and Immature Grown-Ups, written by Chris Harris. And it's kind of like this generation's Shel Silverstein. It's hilarious. There's gross poems. There's silly poems. There's poems that have like running jokes through the whole book. And it's just a really fun book where you can share out snippets. And I think that's one thing that's great to do with kids is it doesn't have to be a whole, let's sit down and read this entire long story. You know, you can just share a couple poems at breakfast and then, you know, head out the door. And every little bit showing that reading is an important part of your day really helps.
Any parent who's had to read their child's favorite picture book over and over knows that well. That's not always as fun for the adult as it is for the child. So, Becky, what book recommendations do you have that can entertain parents maybe as much as the kids?
Well, I think a lot of the picture books that we've talked about already do. There's really quite a few that are funny and silly and have a lot of different levels to them. We've talked about several. A couple others we had on our list, there's one called Alma and How She Got Her Name by Juana Martinez-Neal, and it's about a main character who thinks she has way too many names, and she has six of them, but she goes through the story asking people about her names, and she actually learns about her family a little bit. And so I think books like that, too, where you can, our conversation starters are really helpful, too. Any others that you recommend, Caroline?
Well, actually, let's move. We're about to move into a break, and we'll pick it up on the other side. Caroline Akervik is an author and elementary school librarian. Becky Wojahn is an author and teaches children's and young adult literature. They join us from our studio in Eau Claire. So, do you have recommendations for books, or do you want some recommendations for books for young adults or children? 800-642-1234. It's the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer Kent. Kate is back on Monday. We're talking about kids and books and how to get them together. Did you read a book as a kid that stands the test of time and would work for today's kids as well? Well, let us know. 800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Becky Wojahn is an author and teacher of children's and young adult literature. Caroline Akervik is an author and elementary school librarian joining us from our regional studio in Eau Claire. Let's move to the phones. We've got some folks on the line that would like to talk about this subject. Eleni in Middleton, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
So my daughter is 15 months old, and we read books every single night before bed, so we're at the library about every other day. And we read Feminist Baby, which is an awesome picture book, but we're having trouble finding other books for kiddos her age that promote feminist themes. So I was wondering if your guests had any recommendations.
Caroline, any thoughts on that?
I can't think of one right off the top of my head. Can you think of something, Becky, that you would recommend?
I don't have a title, but I've got a couple websites that you might want to check. A Mighty Girl is a great website that they often do book lists and book recommendations. That might be a good place. And then there's another website called bookriot.com, and they do like the whole range, a gamut of stuff, but they'll often pull together book lists kind of along those lines. I'd also, you know, talk to your librarian when next time you go in, because they have access to all sorts of stuff too and can pull stuff out of their collection, and you know, they're there for answering questions, so they'd be able to really help you as well.
And I do think there are a lot more girl empowerment books available in all age ranges right now. I mean, I think it's a very hot area of interest in children's books. So I think you will not have difficulties finding books that work for your daughter.
And your librarian will have their computer right in front of them, which is what we don't have right now to pull it all up.
We say thank you to Elaney. We move to Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, good morning.
Hi. I would like to recommend the Adventure Mouse Geronimo Stilton series.
Yes.
My kids and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Replaces some text with pictures so the kids can join in at their level. It's full of puns and wordplay. Very enjoyable for everybody.
Caroline, sounds like you're familiar with this
one.
Yes,
I'm a big fan of Geronimo Stilton. First of all, I like that the text itself, it's colorful and bright, and the really exciting words, the big adjectives and adverbs, are made large, or the font is kind of different so that they really stand out. There are many Geronimo Stilton books. It's a very popular series. I would kind of categorize it in that early chapter book series for kids, which is kind of difficult because parents often come in. So thank you for that recommendation. Parents come in to the library and they're like, well, what should I get my kid reading? They're transitioning from early readers to chapter books. So that's a really important area to consider. And there are some great titles in that category.
Let's move to John in Richland Center. John, thank you for joining us on the morning show.
Hi, I have some words of encouragement.
Oh, good.
Well, I come from an academic family, but my father taught me how to read by knowing that I liked adventure. So he set me down in front of The Call of the Wild.
Jack London. Yeah.
And I really liked it, and then now I'm a fan of wolves and, you know, the adventure of being up north. But what I did for my son, he graduated with a master's in computer science. What I did with him was I paid him a penny a page, as long as he kept track in a nice little scrapbook of all the books he read. He read books like How to Become a Millionaire in 3 Days.
Huh.
If it was 100 pages, I gave him $1.
All right. So bribing. Is that an effective tool? Becky,
well,
what do you think?
I think he brought up a really good point that I think book choice is a huge part of getting kids to read. If you hand them books, even if it's your favorite book, I know I've done that to my own kids, and they're like, I don't want to read that. But giving them the choice of what they get to pick and being open to, like, different things are okay to read. It's okay to read a handbook, or it's okay to read a how-to book or a graphic novel. As long as they're reading, that's a really powerful thing, and that's the way to have your kid have positive feelings about reading.
The other point that our caller brought up is the idea of looking for kind of read-alikes. If you find your child likes a certain author or a certain genre or a certain type of book, that is a great hook to get your child to be a reader, because then you want to look at resources like Novelist or, again, your librarian to find books that are like that kind of book. If your child likes action-adventure, if your kid likes survivalist stories, there are many books in that area that will meet your child's needs. So the question is finding the appropriate resources to find the kid the right book for his or her hands.
I think Julia and Madison may have some help for Elaney, our caller who asked about feminist book suggestions. Julia, what do you have for us?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to share that my boys and I love Rosie Revere, Engineer.
Yes, fabulous book.
Such a great book. It's beautifully written. It rhymes, so I think it's appropriate for a younger child. And I just get a little choked up every time we read it because it has such a great message.
Absolutely. That is a fabulous book. And again, I think that fits into that category of female empowerment books that are currently coming out in picture books and in chapter books.
And I think there's a couple other books in that series that are related, too. So that would be a good starting place.
Well, I want to jump ahead a little bit from the age groups we've been talking about. There's a lot of great literature for young adults these days. Becky, what recommendations do you have in that realm?
Well, I just finished a book a couple days ago that my book club is actually reading. It's called Hey Kiddo by Jarrett Krzyzowska. I always stumble over his name. And it's actually a graphic novel. So, you know, it's drawn with pictures and in comic form, but it's a long, long text. And it's a memoir of his childhood growing up. So Jarrett Krzyzowska is a pretty well-known author, illustrator of books for younger kids, but this is his story of growing up. His grandparents raised him because his mother struggled with addiction and his dad wasn't in the picture. And it's really a good story about how art and his whole extended family kind of saved him and got him on the path to where he is. That's one that I loved. Another one is back to nonfiction again, and I guess actually Hey Kiddo is nonfiction as well. Boots on the Ground is a nonfiction book by Elizabeth Partridge, and it's the story of Vietnam. And however, I loved it because it's not just a dry retelling of kind of historical facts. Instead, what the author has done is she's taken that historical event and then told it through eight different points of view. So there's like six soldiers, a nurse, and a refugee. And she kind of alternates chapters. So you learn like the history, and then you see kind of really a personalized view of what's happening. And that was one that was really powerful for me, and I learned a lot from that. So that was a favorite.
Caroline, we have time for maybe one of your favorite young adult novels that's out there. Can you pick one?
Yes, I can. Could I go more middle grade? I think I'm going to pick Hello Universe by Aaron Entrada Kelly. Mm-hmm. And this is a story of Virgil, who has a guinea pig, and he ends up, through a bullying incident, falling into a well. The action of the story takes place over one day, and there are four kind of unlikely allies and, you know, kind of the intervention of the universe who end up, I don't want to spoil the story, but intervening in Virgil's situation. It's a fabulous book. It's, again, written through four viewpoints, but I would like to tag on to what Becky said also. As teachers, we tend to emphasize fiction over nonfiction, and I am a big fiction reader. But our children really need to develop competency with reading and understanding nonfiction as well. So if your child goes in and wants the books on you know, cars, on insects, those are excellent choices as well. It's really important that our children develop the skills to read nonfiction in order to succeed academically.
And visual literacy, too, is important. So don't be worried if your kid is reading graphic novels and illustrated books. That's actually a good thing.
We didn't get to all your recommendations, but we will post them, these books that we've talked about and other books that Becky and Caroline recommend, on the morning show page at WPR.org. Becky Wojahn is a longtime school librarian who now teaches children's and young adult literature classes at the Library and Information Services Program at Chippewa Valley Technical College in Eau Claire. She also writes books for kids under the name W.H. Beck. Caroline Akrovic is an elementary school librarian at Lakeshore Elementary in the Eau Claire area and an author of middle grade and young adult fiction. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
I'm Dean Kallenbeck in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Ideas Network on The Morning Show.